you want me to give you a 5 on the card?
Yeah. That'll work. Hi, everybody. My name's Kathy Watson. I'm a Grateful Al-Anon. Okay, thank you. I want to thank Frankie Ann for asking me to be here in the committee. Thank you for the warm welcome. And Nick, that welcome that you gave me was one of a kind. I won't tell anybody. Oh, my goodness. So I said I was grateful, and I will tell you that is not how I came into Al-Anon. I know there was a few people standing there, so they know what you said. But anyways, I did not come into Al-Anon grateful at all. I did not grow up in an alcoholic home, but I can tell you today in hindsight and after my eyes were opened and working the steps and learning about my family, learning about me, instead of just walking through life obsessing on everything out there, I've come to find out that my family was affected by alcoholism. There just wasn't any active drinking while I was growing up. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I had no idea. I thought when I got here that the only alcoholic that I ever knew was the man that I had ended up marrying. And I truly, truly believe that all of my problems, even before I met him, was because of him and his drinking. I didn't know that that's what I was, that was my attitude, that was my behavior, that's how I treated him. You know, by the time I found out what was going on with alcoholism, I had just gotten so angry. So I didn't grow up in alcoholism, but I will tell you, my family was definitely affected. My mother and father divorced when I was very, very young. I am the oldest. And what that meant was, you know, my mother being a single mom, she went to work and I got put in charge. And I liked being in charge. It was really comfortable. My sister and my brother at the time didn't like it so much. They just called me bossy. And the relationship between me and my mom was such that, you know, when she would come home, she wanted to be mom again, and I didn't want to give up control. And so we played tug-of-war with the control. And so we had a very volatile relationship for many, many years, way until, I mean, we didn't get better until I'd been in Al-Anon, worked some steps, and my sponsor said to me, let her be your mother. Mothers get to tell their kids what to do. And you can just say, uh-huh, and then go off and do what you want to do, you know, instead of arguing and, you know, acting like you know best, which I thought I did. You know, as a kid, you always think you know better. You know more than your parents. And that was how I grew up. And so our relationship was very volatile. So I don't know. Again, in hindsight, working the steps, learning about my life, I can tell you that every relationship that I had been in, any romantic relationship that I had been in, which started pretty young, by the way, because I was pretty obsessed with boys at a very young age, I can tell you in hindsight and working the steps that every single one of them had a drug or alcohol problem, every single one of them. And again, when I got here, I thought the man that I married was the cause of the problem. I didn't know about this what's the common denominator thing that we learn here in Al-Anon, and I was the common denominator because I picked him. And I'll give you a couple of examples. I grew up, my father and then later my stepfather, they were both in the service, and so I moved around. Not so much, you know, like in elementary and so forth. I was pretty much in California. But in, I guess it was the 9th grade, my stepfather came home and he says, hey, you know, I put in for Okinawa or Hawaii, so we might be moving. And I thought, okay, I can do Okinawa or Hawaii. That's not a problem. And then he came home and he says, well, we're going to Oklahoma. Yeah, so I was not a happy camper, and I rebelled and didn't want to go. But you know, I'm a freshman in high school, and I gotta go. So I go to Oklahoma, and here's the things that happened to me in Oklahoma. I was loving California. I was loving high school because, you know, when you're a freshman, you got the juniors, the sophomores, and the seniors to pick from, right? I mean, there's a lot of people. But when you're in Oklahoma, at least the school that I went to, the 9th grade is a junior high again. So I was quite disappointed. And then I will tell you, the first day of school, what ended up happening was somebody was taking me to my class to show me where my classes was, and I saw this guy walking down the hallway, and he had hair that was longer than mine, and I don't have any hair today, but I had hair that was way down below my back way back when, and his hair was longer than mine, and I thought, my mother would really hate him. I think he's going to be my boyfriend. And I will tell you, he was. I mean, it took a while, but he was. I couldn't find him the next 3 days because I've come to find out he got suspended that day that I saw him walking away from me for getting into a fight. And so these are my skills, okay? So these are the people that I pick. I learned how to be a chameleon because, you know, well, I don't know that if it was moving around or what. I think it started very, very young. Because when I came, my first language was not English. When I first came to the States, and I was born in California, but I lived the first 4 years elsewhere. And when I came to the States, I didn't speak English. And I remember the kindergarten teacher telling my parents not to allow me to speak Japanese at home because I wasn't learning English. And she would not let me play with the other kids because we couldn't communicate. Now, that is not today. I mean, people, you know, love bilingual. It's fabulous, but it wasn't back then. It was not something that was cherished. And so so I felt different, and I felt like, oh, I've got to figure out how to fit in. So I think it started way back then. And then, of course, you know, being an Army brat, I just moved around, and I'm the new kid in school. And so I learned how to be a chameleon. And so when I was in California, before I'd gone to Oklahoma, I lived in Chino. And there was the Chicano girls and the sinners, or the surfers. And the Chicano girls, they were called the Chino Sinners, the gang, okay? There was the Chicano girls and the surfers. And so during the year, I tanned really well. I had dark hair. I had long hair. I could become one of the Chicano girls, and I could hang with the gangs. And then during the summer, I hung out with the surfer girls, and I, you know, hitchhiking to the beach and whatever. The only thing I couldn't do was get my hair to turn blonde. But I could. It's because I didn't know about bleaching then. But I could fit in. I could figure out what I needed to do to fit in with the people that were standing in front of me, whoever they were. When I moved to Oklahoma, there was no more, you know, Mexican and surfers. It was cowboys and Indians. And so I fit in really well with the Indians. Again, the boyfriend that I had, he was Indian, and you know, I had, again, long hair. I tanned really easy, and so I became one of the Indians, you know, and I was going to powwows with them and trying to learn his language. They didn't like it very much, but I was having fun. It was a lot of fun. So, again, I learned how to be a chameleon. So I will tell you that, you know, that's kind of how I grew up, and then, you know, as an adult, I'm still that chameleon. I don't know who I am. All I know is that I need to be whatever you need me to be so that I fit in, so that I'm accepted, right? And that's just my, I don't know this, but that's just my MO. That's how I live. And again, I don't know about drugs and alcohol. All I know is that I had boyfriends that needed my help. You know, not that they listened to me, but I felt like they needed my help. And today I know that, you know, what I was doing was, mainly it was like, if I can help you, you know, if I can help you and do for you what you ought to be doing for yourself, then you won't leave me. You know, you're going to need me, you know, and that was what I cherished. That's what I craved, was being needed and security and not being abandoned. So that security plays a role in my relationship as an adult. So I get into relationships as an adult, and I'm in this one relationship where his thing is he's got other things to do other than entertain me, and I don't like it, you know. And he's, you know, he says things to me like, you can have Friday or Saturday, but you can't have both. Which night do you want to go out, you know? And I'm like, wait a minute. If you're my boyfriend, we're going out both nights. I don't understand this. And so I proceeded to do what I do, and that's manipulate the situation so that I get both nights. I buy concert tickets. I do this. I do whatever it is. I'm looking for what I want, right? I'll give you one example of kind of some of the things that I did because I was so insecure and needing that attention. And in my mind at that time, attention was love. You know, that, and the more that attention you paid me, which was really jealousy or whatever, then you loved me, right? And so one of the things that I did way back then was he worked shifts, and I lived in these apartments where there were two ways into the apartment. And I would stand by my bedroom window and look to see which parking lot he was going to park in. And when I found out, then I would rush out the door and be walking up, all decked out like I'd been out all night, walking up the stairs on the other side of the building to let him know, I have a life, damn it. Yeah, right. It was to get that attention, to let him know that, you know, he needed to treat me well and pay more attention to me because he wasn't. You know, and I didn't know that it was drugs and alcohol taking his attention from me. So it was, you know, I was insecure, and the words that he would say to me is, why the heck are you so insecure? I don't understand this. And after about 4 years of dating, on again, off again, I told him, you know, if we were living together, I wouldn't be so insecure. And so we started living together. And a few weeks after that, it was like nothing changed. You know, he still wasn't, you know, I had this idea, and again, I didn't exactly tell him the script, but I had this idea, we're living together, you're supposed to come home, have dinner, I've cleaned the house, I've cooked the dinner, I've done blah, 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 and, you know, I have this whole picture, and he's not coming home. You know, not when I think he ought to be coming home. And so, so we're living together, and again, it's the fighting and the on again, off again, and I got to tell you, you know, when they talk about in the big book for Alcoholics Anonymous, when they talk about not being able to differentiate the truth from the false, I have to tell you, I could not differentiate the truth from the false by the time I got into Al-Anon. He would stay out all night, and I would end up apologizing because somehow it got turned around that it was my fault. If I hadn't have done whatever, he wouldn't have, you know, whatever. It was just nuts. And so, again, we lived together for about 4 years. And one more time, he says, I don't understand why you're so insecure. You can guess what I said then. If we were married, I wouldn't be so insecure. And so we got married. And one more time, nothing changes if nothing changes. And I got to tell you, it was just a roller coaster is what it was. I had no idea, none whatsoever, that alcohol and drugs were part of this equation. I had no idea. I really thought, and when it talks about in understanding ourselves, I really thought it was me. It's something I did or didn't do. You know, I need to do something better, whatever it is. I just really, I didn't know what it was. And so about a year, okay, let me, so the way I got into Al-Anon, or the way I got introduced to Al-Anon, you know, in an alcoholic home, in active alcoholism, I believe, at least it was true in my household, communication is like probably one of the first things to go. Now, I was talking a lot, but it wasn't going anywhere, you know. But communication is one of the first things to go. And so he would come home, and I'd be standing there with my hand on my hip or my arms crossed or whatever, and he'd look at me, and he'd say, well, what's going on? I said, well, we need to talk. He's like, about what? Well, I'm angry. And so what else is new? That is his response. And he was so right. Now, it got me angrier, but he was so right. You know, and he was really, you know, at that time, he was an alcoholic that just wanted to drink. He just wanted to drink and be left at peace. And I wanted to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. You know, so it didn't go well. So about a year after we were married, because we're not speaking to each other, he writes me a note to tell me that he thinks he has a problem with drugs and alcohol and that he needs help. And when I read that, I'm like, hallelujah, now we know what we need to do. You know? So I came home from work and said, okay, you know, they've got all these commercials about get treatment here, get treatment there. Let's get you signed up. And so I gave them the Yellow Pages. Yes, Yellow Pages. It was a long time ago. Gave them the Yellow Pages and said, pick one. And like about two or three days later, he hadn't picked one, so I picked one for him. It was close to the house. You know, I gave them a call, and they said, yeah, you can bring them in, but you need to come in too. You know, and that was the first time when I heard that it was a family disease. But I will tell you, I didn't hear that part. What I heard was, you need to come in too because you have to sign all the paperwork. So I said, okay, because he was going in on my insurance because he had gotten suspended from work. And so I took him to that treatment center, that walk down the hallway to go get him admitted, which was in the back of the hospital, it was a very, very long walk for me. I just remember feeling so much shame and thinking that everybody there knew that he just didn't love me enough, that I was not able to get him sober. You know, I truly believe that. And so I just felt so much shame. And, you know, even to the point I would hear my mother's voice, just try harder, just try harder, you know, willpower to try to get him to stop, you know, and, it wasn't working. So I felt a lot of shame. And I cried a lot during that intake session. And one of the nurses, when I was leaving, because I thought I was going to leave them there and pick them up when they were done, gave me a note with an address and said, this is an Al-Anon meeting. Why don't you try it? Give it a try. And it was very close to my house. And I'm so grateful that it was a candlelight meeting. and I hid in the back of the room. It was a pretty large room. But I will tell you, they talked about things that I had always heard you do not say out loud in public. They scared me. They were honest. You know, they were telling things about their lives and things that were going on in their homes. And it scared me. It really, I never went back to that particular meeting. I did at least get introduced to Al-Anon, and I will tell you, long story short, is that he went in, supposed to be a 28-day program, he went in for 2 weeks and decided to check himself out and relapsed. So he went in and out of recovery for a while, and every time he'd go in, I'd go in, and he'd go out, and I'd go out, until the very last time. And the very last time was a period of sobriety. He was probably sober about 9 months, and things on the outside were going really well. I mean, it was going really well. He was doing all the things that one of the counselors had asked me, what would make you happy? And I said, well, if he goes to work and brings the check home without cashing it, because we were already about to foreclose on the house and blah, blah, I mean, just a lot of stuff. If he'd bring home the check without cashing it, if he'd go to the meetings he's supposed to go to, if he'd do this, this, and this, then I'll be happy. And then one day he was taking a shower and he's singing. Because I got to tell you, you know, my husband was just a very laid-back, happy person, you know, at that time. And he's singing in the shower and I'm in the bedroom just getting so angrier. At every note that he's singing, I'm getting angrier and angrier. Because the thought in my head was, he has no right to be happy. No right whatsoever. With all the crap that he's put us through and that we're still trying to clean up. And then the next thing that happened was the thought of the words in the Al-Anon meeting that I didn't think I was really listening to, said happiness is an inside job. And I thought, oh my God, that was the crack that I needed to say, just maybe there's something wrong with me. You know, and I'm so grateful. Because at that point, I thought, okay, let me go and let me start to listen. You know, they did say things like, listen for the similarities, the differences, and I was still looking for the differences or looking for the things that I could say to him to get him to change. But after that day, I went with a different mentality. And I'm so grateful because not too long after that, I knew I could see him, and I felt like, oh, my God, he's circling the drain again. Something's going to happen. I just know it. And I don't want to go with him this time. I absolutely don't want to go with him this time. And so he did relapse again, and I did not leave Al-Anon. I stayed. I finally got a sponsor. I have to tell you, my first sponsor that I got her because she, I related to her in that she said I'd never say hello to anybody first. And I thought, neither do I. I can't say hello to you first for fear that you won't say hello back. Then what? You know, so if I don't say hello first, then I'm not vulnerable. I don't put myself out there. You can't reject me because I'm going to reject you first. You know, and so I related to that, and so she became my first sponsor. Now, I will tell you, don't do what I did. What I did was I called her after the crisis to show her how well I handled it, because I'm still looking for that acceptance and approval, and she would just laugh at me and say, why don't you call me during, or maybe before, next time, you know. So she was my first sponsor. I've had a couple of sponsors. The second sponsor that I had, I had moved to Arizona, and this woman, she just saw God in everything. And I did not come in here with a God. I didn't grow up in any formal religion. I had no idea about a God. I can tell you today after working the steps that I was either playing God or allowing you to play God in my life, one or the other. You know, but I didn't have a higher power. It was always somebody standing in front of me or me trying to play the role. And so she saw God in everything. And so I had her as a sponsor for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And it was great because I got to watch her and I got to see her find God in everything. And it helped me to find my own God. You know, one that, that doesn't have to look like yours. This is my God. You know, and so I'm so grateful for that because, you know, when you start to work any of the slogans like let go and let God, unless you have one, it's kind of hard. You know, and so I'm so grateful that I was able to find one. And for me, today I can tell you that my God is loving and has a great sense of humor and plays a lot of tricks on me. And thank God also for this program because I got my sense of humor back and I can laugh today at some of those things that I do. And then the third and last sponsor that I have, I've had her for probably about 26 years or so. She had what I wanted because I wanted some structure. You know, I wanted some structure, and that's what I got. And I could hear her voice a lot louder than I could hear mine. But I will tell you, one of the things that used to bug the crap out of me is that every time I called her, what I would typically hear is, that poor man, I feel so sorry for him that he's married to you, you know, because I'd be telling her, well, he did, and this is what I did. And she's like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for him. In 26 years or so, she always took his side except once she took mine. And it was a scenario where he had decided that he was going to help me clean out my closet. When I wasn't home. And so it was before this a women's conference that I was going to, and just before I was getting ready to catch my flight, or I think I was still in Arizona then, so driving up, I had his clothes in a pile in the bedroom floor ready to light them on fire. And the only reason why I didn't, the thought occurred to me, is that I'm going to see my sponsor this weekend. Maybe I'll wait until I get back and then light them on fire. But I went to that conference. I told her what happened, and she really did say, he did what? Oh, my God. And then she turned it around and said, but we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, that he really, really was trying to be helpful. You know, it was hard. It took a long time, but okay, fine. I won't light his clothes on fire. But anyway, so I did get a sponsor, and I started working these steps. I'm so grateful because I will tell you that, you know, for me, again, I said that I really, truly believe that that man was the problem, and if he just got sober, everything would be okay. And today I know because he was sober. He was sober for those 9 months, and it was not okay. Now, end of the story, he got sober again, thank goodness. What ended up happening is I really did get out of the way. I had a sponsor who said, get a life. Go do your life. You know, she taught me to go to company picnics by myself. And I said, I can't do that. They all know that I'm married. How can I do that? They won't care. You know, and I got to learn how to do that. And I, you know, and I started having fun. I started doing things, going to conferences, you know, being of service. I you know, very, very early on, I got to be an intergroup rep. And I got to tell you, this is in the Inland Empire, that first intergroup rep meeting, I thought they were going to come across the table swinging and throwing chairs. It was really that bad on that first meeting that I ever went to. But I was so shocked that everybody held hands at the end of the meeting and hugged. And I'm like, that is not what we do in my house. If you don't do it my way, you get disowned. And I have been disowned many times. You know, I don't follow my mother's direction, and I get disowned a lot. You know, so I got to learn new things in this program just from being of service and going to different places. I'm trying to think of where to go. Let me make sure. Okay, I don't have too much longer. So I did get in this program. I did start the steps. I stayed. He went out. He was out for about 2 or 3 years, and then he came back in, and we did stay together. We're still married, which is a total miracle. But what ended up happening for me is that sponsor who said, get a life, I really did get a life. I went to school, I went to work, I did whatever, you know, the things that I got to learn how to do. You know, I have always gone to meetings. Going to meetings was never a problem for me. You know, part of my program is that I go to open AA meetings. In the very beginning, I would tell the people at that treatment center, I really like the AA meetings better. Can I just keep going to them? And the counselor said, well, that's because that's not your problem. And she said, no, you can't keep going to only AA meetings. So I did, I still love my AA meetings. I still go to an AA meeting, one or two a week. I love the AA meetings. I didn't have a problem going to meetings, taking commitments, you know, getting that sponsor, taking commitments. I did not know about taking commitments. It wasn't just doing the treasure. It's showing up when you're supposed to show up. You know, it's keeping those first commitments first. You could not count on me before this program. You could not count. I might say I'm going to be there. She probably won't see me. You know, because something better came along or something different. I was ruled by my emotions. You know, it was always about how do I feel? Well, I feel sad because he didn't come home, so I'm not going. Or I feel happy because he did come home, so I'm not going. Whatever it is, I can find those excuses, and you could not count on me. But I got to learn about commitments here in these rooms. And so that made me certainly a better employee, certainly a better wife, a better mother. You know, I got to learn how to do those things in Al-Anon. Work in the steps, I got to learn all about me. Some things I didn't like so much, but I got to learn all about me. And one of the things that, you know, for me, because when I came in here and they handed me, in that treatment center, they handed me one day at a time, an Alcoholics Anonymous, a big book, and a 12 and 12, an Al-Anon 12 and 12. So I went home, I read that book in one night, and went back and said, okay, I've done the 12 steps, now what? My arrogance, right? And so to me, you know, working those steps with another is absolutely critical. Because if I'm talking to myself, I can tell you I can justify and rationalize anything. But talking to another person and walking through those steps. And for me, you know, the book work is great. I read the book, I answer a question, I do whatever it is, you know, I do the research, I read all the pages on step one or whatever the step it is I'm on. The book work is great, but it's really going to be about the behavior. You know, how am I incorporating that? You know, because I could tell you I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable, because you told me that, and it's here in my head, but is it here in my heart? And that's a really long distance. And I got to tell you, it took experience. It took pain for it to get there. You know, for me to really say, okay, I am so powerless. I get it now. I cannot do anything. And I didn't know that my life was unmanageable because I was so good at managing stuff. I was the responsible one. But I didn't know that my life was unmanageable because I'm taking care of everything. Didn't know. You know, and so I got to work these steps. I got to incorporate them into my life. You know, I'm not going to go through each of the steps. I told you I didn't have a God. I found a God in steps 2 and 3. You know, I found a God. I'm so grateful for that. But I had to get exercises. Like, you know, my sponsor said, you get as angry as you want and see if you can get it to stop raining. Because I didn't have a God. I just got angry that it wasn't going my way. You know, and so I got to do those exercises. And it's like, well, that didn't work. It didn't change anything because I got angry. And so I got to start to really work those steps, I guess, in a best way I can describe it versus just reading and doing the writing. I got to really incorporate the steps into my life. 6, 3, 4, 5. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but 6 and 7, what I really like for me was, you know, for 6 was really about not doing what I want to do. You know, 6 is not doing what I want to do, like kick the tires and, you know, get revenge and. 6 is not doing what I want to do, and 7 is about doing what I don't want to do, which is act better than I feel. You know, and those are things that I got to practice. And I couldn't do it for me. I couldn't do it by focusing on my character defects. What I had to do was focus on the opposites thereof and how I should be acting. What would make me feel better and good about myself at the end of the day? You know, and so that's what I did. And so, you know, I got to incorporate the steps into my life, and I'm so grateful. What ended up happening for me is that I found alcoholism throughout my family. You know, after I'd been here, and I'm so grateful that I'd been here a while, when I found out that my brother was an alcoholic. And he ended up dying at the age of 39 from cirrhosis of the liver, and I was there with him. You know, I was able to, now I won't say I was really well, but I was in program. You know, he was in Texas, and I thought, he can't go anywhere. He's in this bed. Let me call central office and see if they'll do a 12-step call on him. You know, and their question to me was, did he ask? No, he didn't, but he can't go anywhere. Why don't you try coming by? You know, those kinds of things. So I was still trying, but it was better than it used to be. I certainly acted better in that I was able to be a loving sister, you know, instead of angry at him for, you know, like when he would come to the hotel that I was staying at with my workmates and be completely smashed and I would just be horrified. You know, and what I got to learn how to do, my sponsor said, you can tell him that when you're in Texas that you'll come visit him instead of him come visit you. You know, and so that's what I did. And so I was able to build a relationship with him before he died. We would have dinner in bars, but that's okay. I can do that. You know, and so I was able to mend that relationship before he died. You know, I have lots of alcoholism on my husband's side of the family. You know, his sister was an alcoholic when she came over. I was laughing because when she came and stayed with us, my husband's pouring out her beer. I'm like, you need Al-Anon. But anyways, so I do have alcoholism throughout my family. My mother, one of the things she said to me, after we found out that my brother was an alcoholic, she's like, I just knew it. I just knew it. He was going to be just like my dad. I'm like, your dad? Your dad drank too? Who knew? You know, and there's a lot of ism in my family that I had no idea of until I got here and you opened my eyes. And it's not so much opening my eyes, it's being present. I wasn't present. I have been many places where my brain was not. But you taught me how to be here, mind and body. Thank you. Mind and body. And so now I can pay attention, and I paid attention, and I found alcoholism throughout my life, throughout my family. You know, my brother did die from the disease, and now my nephew, his son, who is 22 or 23, in and out of treatment centers. You know, and so I just keep praying for him and praying for him and praying for him. He was here just before COVID, I think, hit, and I asked him, I said, do you want to come to a meeting with me? He said, well, you know, I do still smoke pot. I said, we won't care. You can come. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to ask you. Just come to a meeting with me. But he didn't want to go because he felt uncomfortable. But, you know, we'll see if, I mean, he knows. He knows about this place. He knows about recovery. So let's see what ends up happening. And I just get to keep him in my prayers. Today, not everything is perfect, certainly. I am still married to that man, and we've had different ups and downs, surgeries that got him hooked on oxy again and detoxing and, you know, in the living room and depression and all. Life just happens. Life just happened. And just we just keep trudging along. And what the main thing that, you know, for me is that statement that was said to me many years ago of get a life and live your life is still true today. I get a life, I have a life, and I live my life. He lives his life, and when we can come together, it's great. We can have, you know, it's icing on the cake, but it's not the cake. My life is the cake. You know, it's baking. It's almost fully baked. It's here. You know, I'm not leaving. But I don't have to have him with me. We don't have to do everything together. I have a life on my own, and it's because of you. My world has absolutely opened up because of Al-Anon. You know, I have a really wide network. I have a lot of people. I know how to say hello to people first. I know how to be a greeter. I'm good with that. But yet, at the same time, the road for me gets narrower. So what used to be okay on my behavior yesterday is not so much okay today. And today I want to stay here and stay with you because I want to be able to sleep at night without tossing and turning. And that's what happens when I'm with you. I get to sleep well. Thank you all for being here. I just love being here with you. So thank you so much. Thank you.